Welcome back to Around the Prompt. This is Logan Kilpatrick. Today we're joined by Ben Tossel, the creator of Ben's Bytes. We chat all things AI automation, low/no-code tools, investing in AI companies, and all the exciting stuff that Ben covers on a daily and weekly basis in Ben's Bytes. You're really going to enjoy this conversation, so stay tuned.
Yeah, Ben, I'm actually curious, is what's the profile? Maybe we could talk about this on camera, but what's the profile of people who read Ben's Bytes? Like, does it tend to skew more like super technical people, or is it like actually Nolan has like the perfect profile where it's like folks who are like really interested and curious about AI, but like don't have like a software engineering background, for example?
Yeah, I think the second biggest bucket is engineering, but I think it's mostly like founder types or people interested in AI generally. Like anytime we feature no code-y type AI stuff, people seem to be really interested in that, and less so. I think we covered papers early on and then dropped those because people aren't really, they're not like that technical. So if that's the bar of like the really technical reader, then yeah, we don't do that because it's not a readership.
A good majority of my evening yesterday reading through them, and I thought it was very helpful. So yeah, I think it's awesome. Phenomenal newsletter.
Yeah, there's a lot out there. But yeah,
I'm curious if you see like back from when the low and no code space was booming, when you were doing MakerPad, when you were doing Zapier, and I think there's still a lot of upside in that area. I'm curious if you're seeing any like common trends between that space and kind of like what's happening with large language models and AI right now, and specifically through the lens of like democratizing who can use these tools. And I'm curious if, yeah, there's any learnings from what you were doing with MakerPad that you think will like play out in an interesting way with what's happening with LLMs and AI today.
Yeah, I mean, that was my whole spiel, I guess. That was my whole thing, was I don't want to learn to code. I find it too hard. I've tried. I can't do it. What are the other options for me? I don't feel like you have to learn to code. And usually it's because you're trying to do a workflow or you're building something that isn't like a really technical product. I think I started building things like, I did an Airbnb without code, and I wouldn't suggest Airbnb being built on no code, but it was, you can build that kind of thing. You can get customers, you can prove that without needing to hire developers or learning to code for 9 months to then build a really crappy version of that. And then you're really like emotionally invested in that thing as well. So I was all around sort of democratization of software, really. And that came through no code tools at the time. This was sort of 2018, early 2019, and it was just that, yeah, you could do more than you think without having to sort of breach that technical barrier. And then that obviously leads to automation and lots of like, if this thing happens, then this thing, and using Zapier a lot for that. And then it feels like it's like almost a natural step to AI where, okay, well, the code can be spit out for you. You kind of still need to understand how some of these pieces work, where you go and deploy it, all the rest of it. And then there's like agents and stuff. And then naturally people are building tools that let you build your own chatbots. Even Zapier has their own AI chatbot builder and things like that now. So if you wait enough time, it'll all become accessible to everyone. And I think it's just been really quick with LLMs that has been, you've seen people on, there's a guy called Andrew, and he was a Zapier, or maybe still is, a Zapier consultant. And he was that for a long time. So I knew him from the no-code space. And then more recently, he's, I wouldn't say learned to code, but he might say that, just using LLMs to generate the code, deploy it on Replit, and then he's now building more and more with code, not necessarily writing it from scratch, but then that's happening more and more often. I think even with no code, people would get to a stage where they're like, okay, well, I want to build this as a real thing now. We'll take this into a coded platform. And I think the best place for someone to learn that you need to do that is when you've built all the building blocks. You understand how software connects to each other. You understand that this is your front end, that the sort of database is your Airtable in my instance. And then Zapier is like all the connective tissue. And you start understanding a bit more behind, what does an API do? What's all the connective tissue, and where do things go? And I think that helps you understand pieces of code. Not that I can write any now, but it's more, I can understand some of like what's actually happening in code.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. I'm curious also if if you have like specific areas or ecosystems that you think are like best suited, like if I'm a founder who has no technical experience, like I should probably go and try to build something in like, you know, these five different ecosystems, because like the other ones probably require like a much deeper technical understanding. I'm just curious if there's like specific industries or areas that that you think are like particularly well suited to use low and no code tools for, from like a I'm a founder trying to build something perspective.
I think it lends itself to like the indie hacker kind of tribe, people who are, I want to build a business. It's not necessarily a VC backable business. And I think that tends to be like, well, I can get this scrappy thing built, whether it's with code or without. But I think that's the perfect place for doing that. And I think if you built, you've sort of boiled down a lot of businesses into their simplest parts, Airbnb marketplace. And like, you can look at things like that and think, well, okay, I can build a marketplace or a community or a, like a, all the sort of digital product information things you can build, courses or stuff like that. So even SaaS applications, my brother builds with Bubble and has built us like our whole sponsorship, like taking payments, people can track things. We can look at dashboard. All of that works with no code. So I think that that seems to be like, if you're not looking to build this huge company, which I don't think most people should, then yeah, I think that's where it sort of lends itself quite highly. And even with AI specifically, like I said, you can build an AI chatbot. If that, if you think that is your big idea, then you can build that with something like Zapier. And that's what I'd encourage. Because even if nothing else, it's get your first users in, get some paying customers in, get people to tell you how good or bad you've actually built this, and you'll understand what it actually needs to be much better, whether you're then going to go and like sort of get someone to help you build it with code or anything else. It's more, am I building something that's worth pursuing and customers actually want and want enough that they're going to pay for? And like, yeah, is this worth my time at all? So yeah, I think it's like the early stages. I guess it was what MVPs used to be. I think MVPs are very different now. But it kind of feels like that anyway.
Yeah, just a quick follow-up, and I'm curious if you have seen the same thing, but I feel like I've been getting pitched on a lot of these companies where it's like, we'll automate the entire software creation process end to end. And you'll just like show up and be like, you know, one line, I want a copy of Slack, and it'll just like write the entire, all of the software and create that. And I'm curious if you've seen those pitches and if you have a perspective or opinion on whether or not that will actually like be possible and be something that picks up steam. It seems like it makes sense, but it also seems like wildly ambitious.
So is the question, have I seen pitches that are like, will help you clone Slack with one line, or is it for software that helps you do things like that?
Yeah, I think it's what's your perspective on those pitches? Like, do you think that's like a viable, as someone who's like done LLM stuff and done low code stuff, like, do you think that will actually like work in the end, or it's like a little too ambitious and not actually going to be practically possible?
I think people overlook why people are on these companies. Like, I was listening to a podcast that was discussing 37 Signals and their Once product. So they've got like a Campfire, which is Slack alternative in its very basic form. And you pay for it once, you've got to deal with hosting it. There's no real support, all the rest of it. Like, all of that stuff is why you pay monthly or pay yearly for lots of these services. And something that just says, for something like Slack, I mean, I don't think I've ever needed to contact support, actually. But it's one of those that the reason you are on Slack is probably because that's where people already are. Or like, if you're building a community on Slack, people love to complain about communities being built on Slack, and Slack's not friendly to those kind of companies, communities, myself included. I've definitely complained about that. And yet I'm still like, yeah, but I'll just do the same thing. I'll figure out that around the rest of it. It's because people are just there. And yeah, I think there's, given what LLMs can do, I think there's a whole world of sort of single use software and single use tools that people will be able to spin up, deploy on their own machines and have it be really customized to what they're doing. But I think that to say or look at a company and say, well, it's just a load of this kind of stuff, I can do that myself, it's kind of the same argument that has been going around for years, where technical enough people can look at Calendly and say, I can build my own version of that. And it's like, yeah, that's sort of where open source kind of cal.com comes from. But there's so much other stuff you've got to think about when you're building things like that. That, yeah, I mean, if you're trying to clone something just for the sake of, that's got a massive market cap, they're like missing out on this kind of customer, then I want to build the version for that. Then I don't know if people are really missing the point so much as like, technically you could build it again, but that's not everything as part of that sort of tool.
And Ben, I guess diving a little bit deeper into MakerPad itself, you know, I'm curious to hear from someone who is similar to myself as far as maybe not having the most coding experience or no code, low code. You know, how did you actually go about creating MakerPad? And then with that, you know, what kind of tools and automation did you use on the back end so that individuals who don't have that coding experience can go in but still reap the same benefits as having coding experience or coding knowledge as well? Curious to kind of dive into some of that.
Yeah, so it happened through all the failures of other things I tried to launch. So I tried to launch a number of things after leaving Product Hunt, and I was building them all with no code because that's just how I could build stuff. So it would be like using Card or Webflow and then Zapier and Google Sheets or Airtable as a back end. And I've just launched thing after thing, waiting for some spark of, well, I suppose the spark is anyone willing to pay me for this thing. So trying to look for really quick validation on, is this worth pursuing in any capacity? I never really got there with any of those, other than every time I tweet about something that I'd launched, people would always be asking me, how did you build this? I know you don't code, so how have you built this thing? So it's the whole, those who can't do, teach. And I thought, okay, well, I'll just build a way to, and then just like, I can build all these ideas that I have. I just remember to record my screen, and then I'll use that as like a tutorial platform. And there was like, I can't remember if it's called Go Rails. There was like a Rails tutorial business that was doing well at the time. I was like, well, it's that basically for no code. There isn't anything like that. So I'll just create that. So yeah, I built it with Webflow as a front end, Zapier is all the connective tissue, and then Airtable as the back end. It's basically, that was it. I'd then go and record videos and stuff with whatever I was using at the time, ScreenFlow or even Loom. I think the first few were Loom. They were really like really bad quality ones that didn't really have not much editing and all the rest of it, but that was enough to get people interested. And actually I launched it as just a type form saying, I will do this thing. Like, these are all the things I've built. I'm going to launch a tutorial platform if you get lifetime access for like $50 and had like 15 people pay. So I was like, okay, I've never had that before. So that's something that's enough to go and like do the next step, which is put up a website and actually put some tutorials up there. So that's what I did. And then, yeah, it just sort of grew and grew. And then it was a side project for 8 or 9 months, and then raised a small round of 350K because it wasn't a VC company. Like, it was never supposed to be that. I thought originally I wanted to build some like big company, and then realized pretty quickly I didn't. So I knew that for me, it's not a VC business. It was a lifestyle business, and I'm going to ignore all of the like negative connotations of a lifestyle business because it was a great lifestyle, and it's nice to have that kind of, I'm in charge of this thing. It just needs to grow. It doesn't need to grow at any level. And it did grow. And it was one of those, the only thing I've ever launched that actually had its own pull momentum where people were just paying. I wasn't like trying to push it onto people to say, I need to get signups. It was just actually happening organically, which was really nice for a change. It'd been a few years where nothing was actually doing that. So yeah, that's how it was all really built. And then it just grew from there, and I hired a few people, and yeah, we were off to the races.
Gotcha. So it does sound like, my follow up question too was going to be more so as far as the market space when you were kind of going to market with this. So basically there wasn't anything on the market such as MakerPad at the moment. There was some more that were a little bit more code demanding, but as far as no code or low code, MakerPad was kind of the first to market. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah. MakerPad was more just like, it was a buffet of all different things you could build with no code. It was kind of like, I know lots of, so like Code Academy existed at the time, and that's very much learn to code. And that was like a buffet of all the different pieces that you would want to learn, and you can choose what you want to do. But there are some paths within that where you're like, okay, I'm going to learn Python, so I'm going to go through this system to get to proficiency and all of that. But with no-code, I felt like the bar was so low that you could spin up something in a few hours or a few days. So it didn't really matter about teaching people fundamentals beforehand and like having you go through some sequence. It was more just like, hey, sign up for Zapier, sign up for Webflow, and sign up for Airtable. And this is how we're putting all of this together right now to build this one marketplace or this tutorial site, things like that. So I just kind of felt like that's maybe how I like to learn, is just if I want to see something, it's if I look at something and it's like, that's interesting, I'll learn that thing. Or what actually happened a lot was people wouldn't necessarily follow the tutorial exactly, but it was more just showing them that you can do this kind of thing without code. So this thing won't look exactly like, so like with coding and learning coding, it's a right answer or a wrong answer most of the time. Whereas with no code, it's kind of like, well, you can build this slightly differently and have the same outcome. So I think people looked at it as like an inspirational, oh, that's a really interesting way to like put these tools together to build out that kind of system. And I can do that. But I've got a very different idea over here that does a very different thing. But those kind of pillars actually still make sense in my context, which I think is helpful because it's just then relatable to your situation rather than people coming to you saying, hey, no, I want to build Airbnb for dog homes. I need to know exactly how to build that. It's like if you look at the Airbnb tutorial, you can do that basically, or you look at any marketplace tutorial, you can basically do the same thing. And then if it's up to you if you want to try and figure out all these weird and wonderful features that's going to make that a $1 billion company. But yeah, it was kind of show you how to do stuff, but also a bit of inspiration of this is what's possible, by the way. So go wild.
No, I was going to say after the success of that platform, I guess I'm curious to hear kind of the conversation with Zapier and why, you know, Zapier kind of thought that MarketPad was a good fit to eventually acquire. You know, what was the discussions between that and how did you get to that solution?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, it wasn't a VC company. So I was getting to the point where it's either we've got to like really figure out this business and grow it and do the next step. What is that next step? I'm not sure. Or is there a better home for MakerPad where that can still exist? And actually, Zapier came to me because someone tweeted that Airtable or Zapier should buy MakerPad. So Wade sent me that tweet and said, hey, we should talk. And he'd been on the MakerPad podcast, and we obviously feature Zapier heavily on MakerPad. And yeah, they just were interested, and we just talked about no-code and where we thought the whole no-code space was going and what is going to happen to everyone, like given the powers of building all of this software stuff. Little did we know that sort of the LLM revolution would be coming around the corner as well. It was more, they want to acquire a community of people building with no code that are probably likely to use Zapier to connect all of the things they're using to build those things. So if you think about it like Indie Hackers and Stripe, that as an acquisition is anyone who goes and starts a business or starts an indie business, they're going to need payments at some point. So they look at, okay, well, we'll probably use Stripe, and you don't need it to be really in your face of like advertising Stripe within that platform all the time. It's just sort of in the back of your mind or in conversations there. So that was sort of similar to MakerPad and Zapier, where we never took money from Zapier to promote them in any way. It's just that's the tool that I liked using. So it was happy that it was a happy sort of coincidence that it all worked out that way. And then, yeah, we wanted to join forces. But I think, yeah, it was there was a big community that we had, lots of people building stuff that either work somewhere already or are starting new things. And Zapier wanted to sort of continue to be on those minds of those people. So, yeah, it was a pretty easy discussion, to be honest. It took a while, as all acquisitions do, but yeah, it was a no-brainer from our side.
Yeah. Do you think there's an opportunity, Ben, for the MakerPad of the AI space?
I'm glad you asked. So, yeah, basically, I've been thinking about MakerPad for AI. I even bought the domain whilst I was at Zapier, literally makerpad.ai. And it was something I pitched internally when I was there. I sort of said, hey, we should do some AI tutorials. And actually, we connected when I was at Zapier about doing some tutorials with Zapier and OpenAI and doing all that kind of stuff. But in those conversations, I ended up leaving. So I left after 2 years because I just wanted to go and do my own thing again. And I had Ben's Bytes up and running. And that was just sort of, I just wanted to go in that direction and be my own boss again. Whilst doing that newsletter, I've just not seen anyone do this buffet style. Anything you're trying to get ChatGPT or Claude or any of these other models to do, how do I do this thing at work? How do I have this conversation with an AI model and get the thing that I'm trying to get done? So that's what we're building, actually, and launching it shortly. End of March should be the launch of it. But yeah, we're basically creating tutorials how you can use AI for work. So whether that's having a conversation with ChatGPT on generating blog and social ideas or mimicking someone's writing style, all those kind of things that are little tasks, but they happen often. They happen across a broad range of different departments in companies, and people just want to know how to use these things. And I think the only things I've seen are courses about like introduction to ChatGPT. I think Code Academy have one that did 60,000 people sign up for it or something crazy. And it's all the basic stuff. And like, there's loads of that basic stuff out there. People want to know real specific use case stuff. Like, I'm in marketing. What are all the marketing jobs, tasks that I have to do? And then how do I just talk to an AR model about that? And I'm sure that in the future, we'll start having things where there's a workflow involved and we use APIs and things like that. But yeah, that's what we're working on at the moment is, yeah, like a buffet style, how you can use AI for work.
Do you have a name yet? Is it going to be part of like the Ben's Bytes?
It'll just be Ben's Bytes. So we're basically going to, like, we've been a newsletter business since pre-ChatGPT. So we started before that. And that gave us a nice bump. So appreciate that. And yeah, it's been a newsletter for a while and people love it. It's still growing. It's just not like, it's not the business that I love or I'm interested in the most. So I've been thinking for a while about like, what does turning a newsletter business into a business powered by a newsletter look like? And what makes most sense? And what are most of our readers looking at or like really interested in? And when it's on there, they're always clicking that thing. So essentially it'll just be bensbytes.com. There's a tutorial library there. The newsletter will still carry on and it'll be, yeah, lots of tutorials. There'll be case studies. We've been doing these Ben's Bytes Pro posts. So like looking at how companies are using AI internally, talking with people like Stripe and other folks like that, Clearbit, CB Insights, how they're using AI, how they're empowering their employees to use AI. So we're going to have case studies like that on the site, tutorials, and then, yeah, the newsletter as well. So there'll be a whole range of like, if you're trying to learn about anything in AI, hopefully it'll be like the one-stop shop where you can find all that information. And then if you're one of these people who want to keep up on everything, the newsletter's there as well to email you every day about everything that's going on.
This sounds so exciting. Me and Nolan have actually been talking for a long time about like doing something in a very similar essence to this. I'm curious, do you have a team of folks? Like, it sounds like this, like there's a lot of stuff and like even just like doing the newsletter every day and like keeping up with all of the things that are happening in AI is like hard to do. Do you have a team of folks who are helping you with Ben's Bytes today?
Yeah, so there's four of us at the moment. So my brother's working on building the site stuff. Then we have Keshav, who's been writing the newsletter with me since January 23. And then Shanice, who was my COO at MakerPad. She left Zapier, moved to Singapore, and then now she sort of hit me up and said, hey, like, what are you working on? Should we do something together? So I was like, okay, yeah, that's when you come and help with Ben's Bytes. And then the plan was never to do any educational stuff. And even after MakerPad, I was like, I'm done with education. I'm not going to like go into that route again. I think it's just not seeing anyone else build it. It's like, I just know what that thing looks like. And I kind of built something similar before for a very different kind of audience, a different purpose. But it's just like, I think that, and people email all the time saying, hey, I want to learn about this thing. Do you have anywhere to go? I'm like, I don't know, YouTube maybe. So yeah, I think that's, we're just building that because I think the opportunity is there. And I think there's a big need for it. And yeah, so we're excited about trying it in the AI space anyway.
And I guess kind of pivoting a little bit here, Ben, putting on your investment cap. I know that you did a few investments into small low-code, no-code AI startups. I'm curious from your perspective, you know, what you look at when making these types of investments, especially with just the influx of AI companies coming to the market. I'm curious to get your thoughts and kind of your, I don't know if there's like a specific list you go through that has a, kind of hit all the different criteria or what that looks for, what that looks like for you.
Yeah, I mean, I had a fund called the MakerPad Fund, which is where I invested in no-code tools. So there's a lot of no-code tools that I invested in there. And then I now have the Ben's Bytes Fund. So that is a fund dedicated to AI, if you couldn't guess that. And yeah, so I've made 11 investments so far with the Ben's Bytes Fund. So that started, that was sort of live from October. And I'd like to say I have a list. It's not really a concrete like checklist that I go through when I'm on calls with people. I'm mostly looking at developer tools because I just find the consumer AI world very difficult to judge at the moment. It feels like there's loads of these companies that are launching and getting like 3 million ARR that are a product that is something that ChatGPT already does or does in a certain way and then is going to improve over time. And lots of them, I feel like, I know they're the wrapper companies, basically, is how they're described. And I think, and I don't know whether this is my lens of how I built company before, is that they don't need to be a VC-backed company, and they shouldn't be, and they should just go and be rich from being a bootstrapper. Like, that sounds great. You should definitely go and do that. So most of the time when I'm saying no is because I just think it's probably not a VC-backable company. So I'm really looking for if all of this AI stuff plays out, and if every company in the world is going to touch AI or need some sort of AI infrastructure, what are the sort of, I guess, picks and shovels that are necessary to build that world? And that's where I'm focusing at the moment. Not that I haven't done any consumer AI, but it's more, I'm just more comfortable with investing in people doing the building blocks. And really, I'm looking for founders that are just like outstanding and have done so much with so little like time or resource. So I just feel like that's so, so necessary in this space because everything's moving so quickly that you need people who are hacking away, like tinkering on stuff, like putting stuff out there because they just want to and find it really interesting. Matt Schumer, who is a founder I invested in, he's one of those folks on Twitter that's just like, every time there's a new model, there's a new thing come out, he's one of the first people to ever put out a bunch of like, hey, so I tested it on a bunch of these things. I built it into this system. This is what I found out. And it's just like, you can't keep up with him. So I'd rather keep up with him by writing him a check and let him go and do his thing. But they're the kind of people I'm looking for. And similar sort of Demi at Pika Labs, like the fact that they built that whole model with like four people in 3 months that was on par with Runway. It's just like, it was just an insane level of output for such a small team in such a small time. And I'm trying to get to the point where if I'm on a call, it's hard to say no. And I want to burst out saying yes during the call. And if I don't get that feeling, I've got like, I take time off after it, it's probably not convincing myself to say yes then. And if I am trying to convince myself, I feel like I should say no to that. And like, they all need to be truly like billion-dollar outcomes. So I think that's always like a hard requirement that needs to happen. And I think because I built MakerPad in the way that I did, lots of the companies I see feel like you should just go and do this, but just like raise some money from angels or raise like less than 500K if you need to go and build a team and that's what you're trying to do it for. And there's just so many of the same kind of company that I see as well that feel like, I know lots of existing tools are either building this or adding this on. I think AI does really help the bigger companies. But that just means that's the new level. That's the new level where everyone's going to be at. So like Intercom adding Finn and then changing their whole company around resolution based pricing rather than $500 a month, like for a chatbot type thing. It's like, okay, so what is a completely new paradigm of customer support look like? Maybe that's something that's interesting rather than, hey, we're Intercom, but AI Intercom. It's like, well, no, actually Intercom is AI Intercom. So you've got to rethink this the whole way around. And I think there's opportunities for when there's a big company, like they've got to shift their whole organization to an AI first one. So there's some interesting things there that might happen, that will this company pull it off and all the rest of it. But yeah, there's definitely a few things, and maybe more came into my mind when I was talking than I originally thought. But yeah, they're the kind of things that I'm thinking about when I'm looking at any company to invest in AI.
Yeah, and I'm curious, Ben, as someone who, for the record, I don't think you give yourself enough credit in this space, but like I think like you are technical in many ways, even though you don't like code every day. Yeah. Like you're definitely sufficiently technical. I'm curious, like how though, for some of the like more technical companies you're doing, like Pika Labs is maybe a good example of this, where they've actually like built a model. And that's like seemingly their like core differentiator. Is it like the speed at which they're building models, or like, what's the thing that you're like looking at for like much more technical companies versus like the application layer companies?
Most of those times, when I'm speaking to a technical founder, I know I don't understand the things that they're building in the way that they understand them. But that's kind of the point, and I lean into that. It's like, can they explain it in a way that I understand it? And then I always like to find something that is working, rather than this is something that we're going to build and this is how it's going to work. I think you could have got away with that many years ago, but I just think nowadays you kind of can't. Like you can build these things and build models and train models and fine-tune them and to get them to do certain things in a really small amount of time. So I look for a technical founder that can explain something in a non-technical way to me that I understand it. And I think that's a good bar to understand, that they know not only how to build a technical product, but also explain it enough to hire other people to talk about it publicly and to do all of the things that a CEO needs to be able to do in order to sort of get that message out of like why this is important. Rather than like, this is a really technical situation where we've built something really technical for it, and we can only just explain it in technical ways. So yeah, I mean, maybe that's not a great bar, but I kind of feel like it's one that's working for me in that way. Like, do I understand that person, where they're coming from, and the explainability of it?
And then, Ben, this kind of goes back to what you're talking about previously about large corporations kind of, you know, being able to adapt to AI technologies and implement those into their offerings. And I know Adobe is coming out with the AI assistance in Acrobat. I guess question around how that's going to affect startups in the landscape that maybe have already come out with some kind of offering similar to what a large organization can offer. Obviously, you think about the Googles and the big companies of the world having kind of monopoly already. So how, I guess, are these startups going to potentially battle and, you know, kind of get some market share against some of these larger organizations?
Well, I think speed is still on the startup side, although it's not as big of a gap as it used to be. Like, we're seeing large companies ship stuff really quickly, which we never saw previously. So still, there's some speed there that is an advantage. I just think they have the luxury of being able to be first and get things wrong, whereas a big company can't afford to do that. Like, you see Google with launching stuff and getting things wrong. There's big ramifications there. And I think if you're small and agile and nimble, you can do stuff that maybe a big company wouldn't be able to do or wouldn't be able to pull off that easily, or they'd have to consider all of their customers, all of their legalities, all of their shareholders, all the rest of it. And I think that's why, like, that's what was interesting to me about OpenAI, is OpenAI was first and could do things that was like, if there was weird outputs, they could be like, oh yeah, well, sorry, like, we're the first people to do this ever. Like, we're working on that, we'll fix it and change it. And then it works like better and better. Whereas when someone like Google comes out a year and a bit later with something and fucks it up so badly, it's like, how can you have done that? It doesn't make sense. And also, it's like, you kind of need to assume, I think, that will this big company with this kind of product build the AI version of this kind of thing? If so, like, should I be building that basically that same thing but with AI in it? And I don't know. I think there's probably worlds where, or like, this might be the thing that AI enables most, is there's lots of versions of basically the same thing. So you can have the Adobe Acrobat with AI, but you have a startup indie hacker version that is a lot cheaper and like works in a slightly different way and you can get a good living from that. But if you're looking to build, again, a venture scale company, and you're building that sort of Acrobat AI assistant product, it probably needs to look really different. Like, it needs to be thought of potentially really differently. I don't know. I see a lot of that where people are obviously on Twitter are saying, like, oh, this new feature thing, this new launch killed however many startups. And it's probably because they're flying too close to the sun. They're going to a real slither of, oh, will this company do this slight one thing that makes this is like what we're based our whole company on is this one slither of something. And they've got the distribution advantage. So they've got all of these other advantages. They've got the cash, they've got the people. Like, it's going to be hard to compete there. So you need to really think about it differently, or come at it from a different angle, or think about other types of customers that would want that and don't want all the other stuff that they're also offering. But yeah, it's like a weird time to be around startups that is exciting. And I'm glad that I'm not like a founder trying to build a VC business. But it's really fascinating to see how people are looking at it and sort of tackling it. And yeah, I mean, seeing lots of pictures, like I said, of taking this slither of something. And I know that lots of startups, when you look backwards, it's like, oh, it was this one feature that we started with, and then it grew into like this big company like Slack or whatever. And I don't know what that looks like from now until 10 years time, where that might happen. Or there might be like the cost of developing software is getting dramatically lower. People can build or clone versions of the same thing quite easily, especially with like AI co-pilots and all the rest of it. So like, there's just other things to maybe try and tackle that might not be as difficult. But yeah.
There we go. Yeah. No, I was going to say that makes sense. And I was curious too, just thinking about it holistically, right? You have investors who want to make a return, but then I was thinking too, kind of going back to that checklist, you know, if you are looking at larger organizations, comparing them to startups and saying, hey, you know, they're basically going after the same market, you know, how do we want to go invest and maybe get a little bit of ROI? Do we think that the ROI is going to be there enough so to actually invest in a company that might compete with one of those larger organizations? So yeah, I think to your point, I think it's a very interesting time in the AI space, and props off to everyone who's trying to do that and kind of make a moat around their specific offering and going against some of those giants. So yeah, I guess quick question for you too, kind of being in this space, are there any companies that you've looked into or have spoken with that you're really excited about and kind of, you know, what their goals and ambitions are?
Yeah, I mean, all my portfolio. so there's a company called Etched.ai that is building a new type of chip that is specifically designed for transformers. And I think that's one of those things where I don't understand exactly how chips are made and that whole process and all the rest of it. But chatting with the founder, Gavin, it broke it down to me really simply. And he's managed to build a really impressive team, like a really seriously impressive team. And they've just sort of proved something that everyone in the chip world said to them that they wouldn't be able to do. So things like that feel like that's a huge swing. It's a very big market if you get it right. And that was something that really excited me. So yeah, definitely would say something like Etched. And who else? So there's Factory. So Matan, the founder there, he's building sort of autonomous droids, I think they're called, to sort of do tasks as a software engineer. So a lot of that going on, but again, it was more the founder that I was just like, I have to say yes to this guy. Like, I just thought he was great and really, really intelligent. So there's definitely been moments like that where I'm just talking to founders that, like, I don't know how much the ideas matter in certain conversations, but I can't say that's true for all of them. So it's not one of my checklist items, but it's something to consider. It's probably at the bottom of the checklist saying, just remember, like, the idea might change, things might happen. Because I know there's lots of people sort of tackling agents and like what's happening with sort of AI coding and all the rest of it. But again, on the agent side, I invested in Matt Schumer with Otherside AI, and they're building all sorts of like agent stuff. So it's all the things behind. They started off with a writing tool. And if I saw a writing tool, I would have said, get out of here, kind of thing. But it's, he's just one of those, like I said, one of those people who just like builds all this stuff that is just got insane pace. And obviously I've seen what they're working on behind the scenes, and like they're building all this like sort of agent framework that people can deploy things for different tasks. And I just think that's really exciting. So yeah, there's a bunch in there that I think definitely would be like, I'd obviously invest again. Like there's all those founders that's how I feel with everyone in the portfolio. So yeah, I just think there's lots of stuff that's interesting around, looking for more always, and we shall see what sort of the next few checks bring. Yeah, we'll see.
But Ben, the conversation, and you mentioned Matan. I'm a huge Matan fan, not an investor in Factory, but I think this idea of droids and agents and everything like that makes a ton of sense. I'm curious actually if, like, very tactically for you, you think there's a near future where like Ben's Bytes essentially becomes an agent. Like there is some agent that is just like running the newsletter, keeping up with all the things that are happening. It knows the writing style. You have, you know, hundreds of episodes or hundreds of versions of the newsletter that have come down. Like, do you think that's actually like a real possibility in the next few years for something like that to be like completely automated away?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be surprised if we couldn't build something almost like that now, just finding the right person to do it. And I think what we try and make sure we are doing is have human in the loop, I suppose, is how I would say it, is that we're curating the stuff that we're seeing. So we see a lot of stuff, most of it is like things that I've found and I'm saving manually through an automation into Slack and stuff, but it's still like that kind of stuff feels difficult to then see how that would be automated. Because it might be through a Twitter feed that is on your For You tab, or I've just like clicked on a couple of things, and then all of a sudden I end up somewhere. Like, I don't know how that sort of translates into agent behavior. But certainly, like, writing it, putting it together could be more suited to an agent. And then we have these summaries that we do on like the big news stories of the day. And that's, we sort of use a mix of AI to condense some of the information and have Keshav sort of write some of the stuff himself. So I think we like having the human element as part of it. There's definitely probably things that we could have handed off to an agent, like probably now if we looked into it a bit more. I just feel like every agent experience I've had has never been great. Like I think my tolerance for no experience or bad experience signing up for an agent platform is just like near zero. Either needs to work straight away or don't bother. Like there's one I signed up for, you connect your email, then you say find emails in your inbox. Like one of the most straightforward agent type use cases that people talk about. And then the first like link was a spam email. And I was like, okay, I'm out of this. Like that's gotta be baked into that product somewhere. Like that can't be the user experience of someone. And I, being in the space and knowing about it, like a normal person's going to think that's just rubbish. Like that's no good. So yeah, I'm sure we could do stuff, but don't trust it until it's like really robust and I've got Matt or Matan making it for me, then we'll hold off on that. But I think they've got bigger things to do.
I'm curious to get your perspective on this. This has been one of the reasons why I've always been so bullish on Zapier. And I think especially now in the last like year, it feels like they have all of the building blocks to make like really useful, because they've like kind of solved the like connection problem of like talk to your Gmail, talk to Notion, whatever it is. And like, to me, that's actually like, the other stuff already exists. Like the LLM layer is like working and successful. It's like all of the integrations that need to happen. And I'm curious if you think that's going to be like a, I'm curious to get your take on that, but also like if they have like a outsized opportunity to be like one of the large players in the agent space as well.
Yeah. Well, I hope so from a Zapier shareholder point of view. And I agree with you. I think they've got all of the building blocks to really like capitalize on this whole moment where like normal people, like not knowledge workers who aren't technical, like what is their entry into the AI agent space, so like automation agent AI stuff, going to be like? I think Zapier is probably perfectly situated to sort of take advantage of that. And I think Mike, the one of the co-founders, tweeted out They've got AI bots coming soon. I don't know if it's like this week or next week. So I'm interested to see what that's going to be like. And obviously you can just assume what that might be. I actually don't know. But yeah, like they've been building their stuff with interfaces. They can build your own chatbot. You can build like all of these like RAG applications and everything else that you see lots of people building from scratch. So it feels like a very good position for them to be in, to have all that sort of ready.
And then Ben, before we get to our last question, and we'll link all this to in the podcast notes, but where can people find you? Where can people interact with you? Obviously we got Ben Bites, but where would you kind of position the people who are interested in following up after this, after hearing this pod?
Yeah, I mean, bensbites.com. We do have the .com. And yeah, on Twitter, Ben Tossell, TOSSELL. That's the best place to find me.
Phenomenal. And then we end every pod by asking our guests, you know, we're early on in 2024, but curious to hear from your perspective, one thing that you're very interested in seeing in 2024, and then one thing that you are still a little bit nervous on, that maybe you don't wish comes to fruition in 2024, but gets pushed down the road a little bit further.
GPT-5, I guess, is one of the ones that I could say looking forward to that. And then, yeah, just, I don't know, I'd like to see Google launching stuff without fumbling. Like, I think there might be some sort of big change over there, and I think it should happen. And then, like, people get excited about what they start doing as well. I think they've got all the ingredients to do things well, not currently, maybe, with some of the just, like, different layers of people and process and policy, and they've just got to get all that fixed, I think, for an AI world. Otherwise, I think they're going to be in for a tough time. So be interesting to see it, especially from a newsletter writer point of view. It's given us lots of stuff to talk about. So long may it continue, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like this is a great time to have a newsletter. There's so much cool stuff that's on the horizon. Just even in the last week, it's been crazy to see. So Ben, thank you for the time. This was awesome. Like, huge fan.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Ben's Bites is incredible. If folks aren't subscribed, like, subscribe. It's the easiest way to keep up with everything that's happening in AI.
Appreciate it, guys. Cheers.
Yeah. Thanks again for being here, Ben. I appreciate it.
Awesome.
Thanks.